You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Hey everyone, this is Sellers.
And this is Stormy.
And this is Unforgotten,
where each episode will highlight unsolved missing, murdered, and suspicious death cases in Alabama in order to raise awareness and hopefully obtain some answers for victims and their families.
Please remember that any individual referenced in the podcast should be considered innocent until found guilty in a court of law, and any opinions or views expressed in the podcast are solely those of participants. Listener discretion is advised, as some of the content discussed in the podcast may contain violence or graphic descriptions and may not be suitable for all audiences.
Hey guys, Stormy here. This episode, part 3 of Daniela Vian's case, is being released a week early for subscribers. We got it done a bit early and thought, why not? It is being released on the regular schedule March 4th, though. In part 1, maybe 2 also, we mentioned and shared a couple clips of an interview with Daniela's friend and fierce advocate, Shauna Hayden. We thought since it was a great discussion, we wanted to share the full thing. We did have to make some edits, and we also split the interview into 2 parts to make it a little more consumable. Because, you know, we tend to digress and go on tangents, as you guys probably know. And as interesting as those may be, we had mercy on you as we didn't want to scare off our wonderful listeners. You will see both parts of the interview in our feed, so for those who want the full meal deal, go for it. A couple notes about the edits before we get started. We wanted you to know that the content wasn't manipulated. The cuts were for important reasons aside from time. One, there were a few things that we couldn't share publicly, so we did have to make those cuts. Also, both Sellers and Shauna had colds, so we edited out most of the big coughs, sniffs, and sneezes. But you might still hear a couple. Also, an advocate-centered note. As you know, we take all of the cases we share very seriously, and each of them and their families are like family to us. But as advocates, we know it's okay to laugh at ourselves a little, or a lot, to keep our sanity. Please don't judge us when we cut loose once or twice. The episode isn't fancy, just a great talk with someone who cares tremendously for a friend whose life was cut far too short. One more quick note, the interview was done in 2 sessions. I wasn't able to make it for the first chat, so you will only hear Shauna and Sellers in the first part, and there's a bit of sound difference due to different recording methods. We hope you find this informative and interesting, and maybe listening to Daniela's story in a different way will spark a memory for someone or compel someone to come forward who can help resolve her case. All right, here you go.
Let's start with an introduction of who you are and how you know Daniela.
Okay. Shauna Hayden. We work together at Hurricanes Grill and Wings in Mobile. That's where we met when we became friends working there.
What kind of, like, did you guys talk a lot or did you, because I think you had told me before that it was kind of one of those things where, like, you were really good friends, but you're the kind of friends that you could go a while without talking and then you just pick right up where you left off. So you might not have necessarily seen her, hung out with her, you know, every day, but
we weren't close at the time that all of this happened. When we worked together, we were close because we did hosted kids night together and then like decorated the restaurant for the holidays and stuff. And then outside of work, I would give her rides like to and from work or whatever. And, you know, we'd hang out sometimes after work or whatever. But when I stopped working at Hurricanes sometime in probably 2016, we didn't stay as close, but we'd still send each other messages or whatever, tag each other on Facebook or, you know, just like random stuff like that. But I hadn't talked to her in, I think, since like the November prior to all of this happening. And that was just some Facebook messages back and forth. So,
yeah. I've got friends like that, like some of my sorority sisters that I saw in college. I don't necessarily see them or talk to them all the time, but like, it's not a big deal for us to go
just reach back
almost
out.
Like a year without talking, then just randomly send a message. Hey, have you heard about such and such? And there's no need to like rehash all this stuff that happened, like, or what have we been missing? It's just like, we've been talking.
Pick right back up.
Yep. You've been really vocal about her case. So even though there was that time there, and I think probably part of that is just one, when you're a decent person and you know somebody, you kind of do that. But like, what was there anything specifically that drove you to kind of be the voice for her? Because that's kind of what it is.
I don't know. It just didn't seem like her going missing. Like, we all knew that Daniela really cared about her daughter. Like, that was like her pride and joy. You know what I mean? Like, she was, I mean, when we worked together, Cora was like, you know, two or three. So even the little things that they were doing, like, you know, making little arts and crafts and rolling down hills and stuff, was a big deal to her. But, also too, not only did I work with Daniela at Hurricanes, but I also worked with Randy at Hurricanes, which is who she went to meet that night. And Randy played softball with Denson and Mallory. And it just so happens that my husband was also on that softball team at the time. So it was all just like really, really close to home. Yeah. And then the day that it went, like the day that most of us found out that she was missing was actually the night of the 19th, which was my birthday. So we had gone out to dinner or whatever we did that day. And then when I got home that night and was scrolling through Facebook, that was when I saw the post that Julie had made about her being missing, which was, you know, not something that you want to see. And from there, just kind of went from me and my husband to talking about it to, you know, trying to reach out to Randy. And then that just kind of got the ball rolling. And I reached out to Julie and was like, hey, you know, if there's anything that you need from me, if there's anything I can do, you know, let me know. And then that was kind of our first contact, and for them from there it just didn't really stop. So
we've talked about this before. Your birthday's on the 19th and my birthday's on the 17th.
Yeah.
And that was, I think, like Daniela's case is what actually was kind of the catalyst to starting Alabama Cold Case Advocacy, because I just remember sitting here, and for my birthday, my youngest bonus daughter at the time wasn't supposed to be here that day. And she surprised me. Like, her dad went and picked her up, and she's standing there at the door with this cookie cake and this big grin on her face. And she wasn't that much older than Cora at the time. And after that, when it came up on the 19th that Daniela was last seen on the 17th and that she had a daughter, she's a single mom. I was a single mom at her age. She's 25.
Yeah.
And it just was like a gut punch. And from that moment forward, all I could think every time I looked at our youngest was, God, Cora is missing out on all of this stuff. Like, she's not going to get to do cookie cakes with her mom. She's not going to get to do dance recitals and all of this stuff because, you know, we're months down the road at this point and there's no news.
Right.
And because it was on almost every news cycle to begin with. And then,
and anytime a car was found or whatever, it was
like, oh my gosh, what was Lakeside where they're pulling out a random car?
Well, and then the way that they hit that too on the media was, you know, a car is being pulled out a mile from where Daniela Vianne was last seen, or
and then like, whatever, she's 17 miles away.
Yeah, right. And then, of course, you know, so that led everybody to believe that that was going to be her car, and then it wasn't, and then it was just right back to, you know, where is she and what happened to her.
And yeah, I worked downtown at the time. And so there was rumors going around to begin with about, you know, she may have been downtown. So she may have been spotted downtown or, you know, going that way. And I remember standing in our conference room, looking out over like the canal right there, thinking, oh, there's a boat ramp like right by the convention center, because they, I think it was in one of, you know, a bunch of the Facebook groups popped up and there was a comment in one of those about something about water.
Oh yeah. That's what everybody said.
And so I'm like sitting there looking at it and I'm like, downtown, like her last ping was possibly downtown. And then it turned out it wasn't.
Right.
But, I mean, unless it was on her phone, which would be interesting to know, actually. But I remember sitting there watching, like looking downtown thinking like, where, it's, the Mobile's big, but it's like not that big. What, where is
it? Well, and that was the thing that most people talked about, the water. So like when me and Julie would go out to look or put out fires or whatever, like we were always drawn to the water in Mobile.
Yeah.
That's what like Sarah Lynn never came up in conversation or really honestly any body of water outside of Mobile because she didn't know anything outside of Mobile.
But she wasn't from here.
Right.
And
I think the only reason she was here was because of Tyler and his family. So she didn't have like any family here. I don't even know where her mom was living at the time, but wasn't it North Carolina or something like that?
Yeah, North or South Carolina, because she temporarily, I think at the beginning of the year, went over there for a little while.
But yeah, as far as her personally having like any family here in Mobile or even Alabama for that matter, there wasn't any. Now, I do think she has like an aunt. I want to say her aunt lives in Florida. And I could be wrong about that. But nothing, you know, no like roots here or anything. Just Tyler's family.
And she, her apartment was out off University. How far did Julie live from her? Like, is it all kind of in that, where her kind of hub, I guess, like central hub would be all kind of like in that area. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily in North Mobile County.
No, because like everything, like all the places that I knew of that she worked were literally like right there in that whole like Schillinger Airport, University, Greelot, like square, all of that kind of right there. Because,
No, Hurricanes was downtown, right?
Mm-mm.
No?
No, the Hurricanes that we worked at was at Airport in Schillinger.
Gotcha. Okay.
Right there, like behind the Burger King, the cut through that comes out of the Lowe's parking lot.
Oh, you go, yeah, like, straight across.
I think it's like Yummy Yaki now or something, but yeah, so that's, there was one or something, Island with Grilling Wings, or there was something other.
There was something. A Hurricane downtown, and then it was something else. There was a couple different places. It was Montego's at one time.
Yeah.
Several different things. It never stayed anything for very long, though. But I, in my head, I always thought that was the Hurricane. I didn't realize that there was one out
right
there.
Right there, Airport in Schillinger.
And so she wouldn't have, with that being kind of where her hub is and her not really having anybody beyond, you know, I mean, she had friends, but family-wise, they're all out there. There's not any reason that you can think of that she would have even been in Sarah Land.
Not at all, no. And the other thing, too, that, like, a lot of people don't know is that she, you know, obviously a lot of people know that she had gotten the car the day that she went missing. But prior to that, it had been, I want to say, right around 2 years that she had even had a car of her own to drive around because she, that the last car that she had, which also happened to be a Chevy Cruze. So it wasn't like, it wasn't like the Chevy Cruze that she got the day she went missing was new to her, but it wasn't the first time that she had owned that particular car.
Yeah.
So obviously there was a reason that she bought the same car,
right.
And, you know, liked it, was
comfortable
with it.
Yeah.
Exactly. Fit her. But that car, the first one that she had, was totaled, and her, from what I understand, her insurance had lapsed.
Mm-hmm.
So it took a while to be able to get to a position where she was able to get a car financed because of what had happened before.
And I won't put this in there, but it was Tyler that wrecked her car, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I thought so.
So yeah, like that was why that was like such a big deal. And like, I remember when she made the post about getting the first car, cause it was like lipstick red, which was her favorite color. And like, we were all super happy for her. Cause you know, I mean, that's a big deal for like a single mom, which I mean, I know like her and Tyler were together. They were kind of off and on at the time. So, but it's a big deal to like be a server and get a car, you know, and be able to.
Because that's not always steady work.
Right.
I mean, you rely, it's under minimum wage for hourly pay, and then you just have to base it on like tips and things. So like that is a big deal. And she had I remember them posting the picture of her like journal entry where she kind of had these goals and things that she was working towards, or like milestones that she needed to reach, because the goal ultimately was for her and Tyler to get Cora back full time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess backing up a little bit to go from the beginning. So, she and Tyler, they were on again, off again. They had moved. They met each other, like, their families were on the same military base.
Yeah, somewhere in Kansas, I think. Yeah.
And then they kind of reconnected later on Facebook. He was deployed, maybe, or some.
I don't really know how all that came about. I know that, like, him and his family moved here, and then somehow she ended up coming here. Not really sure how that happened, or I don't know, but she ended up here. And then, you know, I think they kind of stayed off and on with, Julie and her husband at the time. And then when we were working together, Daniela was staying at Julie's house.
Mm-hmm.
So like that, when I would go pick her up or drop her off or whatever, that's where she would be coming and going from. But I know when this all, you know, when she went missing, that they had gotten that apartment, which is also, you know, if you're paying rent and getting a car, you're fairly, you got to be responsible to an extent to be able to take on all of that stuff, especially if you're doing it on your own, even for a short period of time. So
it's a lot of responsibility bill-wise. I tell my kid all the time, hey, just enjoy the fact that you don't have bills yet. Like,
same.
You know, I want you to do all the things in school that you want to do as far as extracurriculars and things like that, because there will be a time in your life where you have to be a grown up and deal with bills and things. And right now that's not your responsibility. So, you know, I want you to do the things that one day you won't have the opportunity to do. And so that is a lot. And, you know, she and Tyler were off and on. He was struggling with an addiction, and I think it was pretty severe, at least at some point.
Yeah, I think so.
To your knowledge, did Daniela have any kind of, we know from the news articles that she was using Vyvanse, which is pretty common.
That she was trying to get it. And I mean, really, we only know that because of her, I guess, quote unquote, best friend claiming that that's what she was doing that night. Because nobody else but Hannah said that. Like, you know, wasn't like Randy said, oh yeah, she was trying to get some pills for me, or there weren't any messages or anything like that. That was strictly something that she said, which was always kind of, I don't know, just kind of different, because not only did she say it, but then she made the point to, well, I'm the only person that she got it from. But then according to, I want to say Julie, when they had gone through her phone, there were some messages where she was asking for somebody's phone number so she could get some or whatever. And it wasn't Hannah. So I don't know that she was doing it. The only reason you know what I mean, that ever even came up was because of Hannah. And I mean, there was a point where we didn't have a reason not to trust her.
Yeah.
So,
I mean,
kind of believed the things that she said. And then, I don't know.
Okay. So I thought I remembered Julie saying something about there being messages maybe in her phone.
Because Julie said that whenever her and Denson originally met at the police department to give the like missing person statement, and when he turned the phone over to her, that they met at the one on airport, right next to billiards or runway or whatever. And that they told him to go to the one downtown on Government. So she had the phone, and that, like, she was looking through messages and phone calls or whatever.
Yeah.
From the one on Airport to the one on Government. And then when they got there is when she turned the phone over.
I assume Mobile still has that.
I would.
I mean, it's, I, as far as we know, like, none of that stuff's been released. Who could have been in the car?
Like the car. I mean, I would imagine that they still have it. Unless they released it to, like, her mom or something. But
I don't even think she came down here.
Well, even if she did, I doubt that that's something that they would even, like, send to her.
Surely they wouldn't have because it's technically, from everything they've said, it's an open investigation. Mm-hmm. It might not be active because they've said, you know, it's still open, but, you know, as if you got credible information.
Comes forward, right.
Yeah. So, as far as we know, Tyler struggled, I think, with heroin, I think is what we had found.
I think so.
But that was not something that Danielle was necessarily involved in. Mm-hmm. We know that she was pregnant prior to this because she gave birth in June. But to my knowledge, the baby was adopted, but they never identified who the adoptive family was. Mm-hmm. But we just know that it wasn't Tyler's.
Right.
And I think there was even a rumor that maybe the family that had adopted the baby was a police officer and a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
But
a Mobile police officer.
A Mobile police officer and a teacher.
But that hasn't been...
That's never been confirmed.
Confirmed that I know of to anybody. Yeah.
And from everything that we've seen, there was no, like, it wasn't like somebody was forcing Daniela to do that. It was completely voluntary on her, it was her own decision. And they had even given her the option of, like, having an extended, like, 6 months or something to change her mind as far as whether or not she actually wanted to be involved.
Mm-hmm.
And if I read everything right, she kind of opted, and I don't know that I really blame her here because I don't know if I'd be able to do it, to not see the baby or hold the baby before she left, and that she wrote a letter for them to give. It was a baby boy, and that she wrote a letter for them to give the baby.
Well, and all of that stuff was also from Hannah.
So we don't know that that's true.
I mean,
I wasn't sure where that came from.
I can only hope that she wouldn't make that up, but there's no telling, really. I mean,
true story.
I don't think that Julie really... I mean, I know Tyler was there that day, so that could have come from Julie, but I feel like that is stuff that Hannah said.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Because, you know, Hannah also said that she was there that day and that Danielle didn't want to hold the baby, and that she actually claimed that she met the adopted family. So
really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, saw them in the waiting room or whatever and met them, but then didn't, I don't know.
Well, that's,
yeah.
Take that with a grain of salt.
Neither here nor there.
And then that same day that Danielle had the baby in June, Tyler overdosed that day, right?
That, I think so, because something along those lines, because I think he was at the hospital when she gave birth, and then he turned himself in after that.
Right. I think that's how we had it on the timeline that we did through Uncovered, that maybe he was either in the hospital parking lot at the time it happened, and they revived him with Narcan. He ended up being able to go to, and I don't know how fast that stuff works, whether or not that could even be possible.
I don't even know the details of all of that either. I just know that he something happened prior to her giving birth, right. And then he was there that day for her, and then
turned himself in. At this point, like, he's there when she gives birth, but then he is in jail through this. So, yes. Like, he cannot be a suspect as far as being the person responsible for this because he was in jail.
Right. And it's not, like, Tyler's not the type of person that has connections to orchestrate something like that from Metro either. Yeah, no, not at all. And even, like, afterwards, like, he had to get a – I want to say that he was released the following week, but I also feel like he got out on a pass for – the vigil, because like he had like a caseworker or whatever that was there with him that he had to like
check in with, or
he came with her and they left together, so it wasn't like he was just like
free to go
out and about on his own free will kind of thing.
But this that would have been after she disappeared. It wouldn't have been before
after it was filed too. So that's what I'm saying. Like, he was in jail because that was one of the that was kind of one of the first things that everybody went to was, you know, where's Tyler? Uh-huh. Because, you know, everybody knew that they had a off and on, sometimes volatile relationship or whatever. And then once that like was confirmed, I think we even went as far as like getting something from the jail saying like Tyler was in jail from this date to this date.
And doesn't Denson say at some point, like, he gets a call from the jail and it's Tyler, and that's how he actually got Julie's number. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, like, there's really not any dispute that Tyler was in jail at this point.
Right.
And he's out now, he's out now, doing well.
Doing really well, yeah.
Great.
He's doing really, really
That's good. How's Cora doing?
She's awesome. She's big.
I bet she's growing like a weed.
She is. It's pretty crazy.
She was four? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, when they first came out and did the media thing, they said something like she was 4 months.
Yeah,
and
no.
That was not right.
No, she was four. She just turned 11.
She's cute.
She's growing. Like, it's crazy. And she's so, like, she's definitely her mother's child. Like, it's cool. And don't get me wrong, like, she has some of Tyler's little tendencies too and quirkiness, but like, she's colorful. She kind of has like her own style, you know, just whatever it is.
Do you see a lot of hair colors in her future?
Not, well, maybe. I don't know. She had like a, like one of those little things, like a extension that was colored.
Yeah.
And she wasn't really a fan of it. So maybe more not. Like different colors of like makeup and nail polish and stuff like that. But yeah, it's pretty funny how much she's like her mom. That's pretty cool.
But I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, you know, for sure.
Because it kind of just, it's little pieces that you get to like, you get to look and be like, oh, there she is. Yep. You know, like if my kid randomly falls down, I'm like, oh, there I am. Because that's like, he doesn't look like me at all. And he's way taller than I am. So I have to look for the little things. Yep. And I'm like, oh, that's definitely my trait.
Yeah, that's my kid. Like, I'm like one of those people that has the, you can say something and a song lyric is going to
go in my head. Oh, my gosh. And yes.
That's how my kid is all the time. And sometimes it's like, it's funny. He does it sometimes to be aggravating, but you can't even like get mad about it because it's funny. So it's just, it is one of those.
And little, I mean, you run around dressed up singing happy birthday songs to people. So.
Which he absolutely hates and doesn't want anything to do with.
No. So,
he's gosh. I don't tag me in it. I don't want any part of it. Da, 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 da. But then he'll be like, are you going to do a telegram? And I'm like, do you want to?
Do you want to go?
And he's like, no, leave me out of it. Leave me out of it.
I think they're great. I think they're like the funniest thing.
It's a good time. It's definitely fun. I did one for Cora's birthday this year. That was
pretty cool. Oh, that is cool.
Picked her up at school in an inflatable unicorn costume and a bunch of balloons. Actually scared her at first, but it was like a good scare just because I came from around the corner. But yeah, it was really funny.
That's great. So we know that, you know, we talked about Daniela had given birth in June. Tyler had been dealing with substance addiction. And so at some point prior to Daniela giving birth, Julie and her husband had kind of taken over basically raising Cora because neither Daniela nor Tyler were really in a place in their life to be able to provide that like stable environment.
Right.
And it wasn't a fight that I understand, like this was something that was all agreed upon by all the parties involved that like this is in her best interest because we don't have our life together right now.
I think that's exactly how it went too. And then it went to court like officially after she went missing. But from what I understand, from what Julie said, was the court kind of left a like a clause, you know, like when Daniela shows back
right.
up, we can, you know, if this is what she wanted, then, you know,
yeah.
we'll go back over it. But as of right now, this is definitely what's
really
in her
the
best
only,
interest
yeah.
too, so, yeah.
And the hearing actually had been scheduled for a little while.
Yeah.
That wasn't something that, it wasn't something that just popped up after she disappeared. It was
right.
that after they'd met, you know, it takes a little while to get to hearings anyway.
Well, but, and you can tell from like her goals too, that were shared, you know what I mean? That wasn't like,
it wasn't
a permanent thing. Like she was just like trying to like, write her kid off. Like,
yeah. And it wasn't a surprise.
She was trying
either.
To get
it
to
was,
a spot where she was in a position where she could do what she needed to do as far as being a mom and taking care of her and giving her the, not, you know, not just the things that she needed, but maybe some of the things that she wanted to, but she knew that she needed to get to a certain place so that she could do that.
And
so.
Like, I think one of the goals said, have Cora sleep over 80% of the time mm-hmm. or something like that. Drive her to school every morning.
Yeah.
So it was definitely a, you know, we know this is the best interest, but
I'm still
the end point is I want my kid yeah. back.
And
like,
I'm still going to be
yeah.
in that role too. Like, I'm not just like giving her up so I can go do whatever I need
go,
to do.
Right.
But I'm still going to show up too. So, and that was the thing too with Julie, like, you know, Cora was out of town at the beginning of the week when Daniela had gone missing, and Daniela knew that she was coming back Thursday. So they had already made plans
right.
for Daniela to come to the house on Thursday when Cora got back. And when she didn't, that's when she like really
she
knew that
yeah.
something wasn't right because she, you know, that wasn't something that she would have missed,
she would
especially
have
now that she had a vehicle, you know,
right.
There, I mean, she would, there was nothing that would have stopped her. You know, she had
right.
a car, she had already made this plan. So when she didn't show up, that's kind of, I think, when Julie really started to panic and was like, wait a minute.
Okay.
And that's when Julie made the post on Facebook too, that, you
yeah.
know, hey, if anybody's heard from her or seen her or whatever, you know, let me know. And then the next morning is when they filed the missing persons report. So, because obviously by then she still hadn't showed up, which was very out of character for Daniela when she made plans with Cora. So,
and I guess going back to that, so we get to the whole point of like why that was even, why they were concerned about where she was. So she had this list of milestones that she wanted to achieve so that she could be working towards this overall goal of having Cora back full time. And, you know, on what we were talking about, it was have Cora, you know, the majority of the time driving her to school. But one of the things was to get her own car again.
Yeah.
And so she had saved up enough money to buy this Chevy Cruze, which was her second one because, you know, obviously she'd had the one before. And I'm kind of with you, like if she liked the car and she was comfortable
right.
with it, why not go with exactly what
yeah,
you already had,
exactly.
you know, especially if you really liked it. You know, I have a Highlander and I love it and am undecided about whether or not I need to stick with an SUV. But if I did, I'd go right back with another
right.
one because I like it so much.
That's right, me and my Jeep.
And so she goes and buys this car on July 17th. So this is a little longer than a month after she gave birth, like a little over a month, right?
They said it was like exactly 6 weeks.
So when she gave birth, we knew or have heard that she was having complications from that, that, you know, even the 6 weeks, she was still having pretty heavy bleeding. She
well,
was still,
I think a lot of that was because she went right back to work.
Yeah, within like a couple of days
yeah.
after giving birth.
Julie said she was back at work within like 3 or 4 days. So
yeah.
she didn't really give herself time to heal. And, you know, as a server, you're on your feet.
All the time.
All day
and
long,
you're not
too.
Supposed to be picking up on heavy things.
Mm-hmm.
And so it probably prolonged her healing anyway. So at the time, you know, she's going to get this car, but she's also still dealing with these complications that haven't resolve themselves. And so this is a big day for her though. Like she's
yeah.
going to finally, like, this is like the big
going
thing.
Her car.
Yeah.
yeah.
And she goes to Pearl Motors, which is, that's close to Cottage Hill, right?
It's on Cottage
on
Hill.
On Cottage Hill.
It's right there at the corner of Cottage Hill. And like, I think Pleasant Valley right next to the Harley.
You know, initially I thought it was the car lot by the Shell station
mm-hmm.
because there's one of those
yeah.
places like right there. And so that's where I thought it was. And I was like, isn't that going to be ironic?
yeah.
But because of the financing, like they did the buy your pay here, like you
mm-hmm.
will finance you, whatever.
Yeah.
They put a GPS in it in case it needed to be repossessed.
Yeah.
And so the thing pings all day long.
All day.
And I'm looking at the GPS records that you have, and it looks like when the car is started and it's still turned on, it will ping every 2 minutes. It's like sending whatever. But then every 4 hours, regardless of whether the car is turned on, it sends a heartbeat.
Yeah.
So it actually says like stop on the pings
like when
whenever the car shut off.
Yeah.
And so it took me a little while to, when I was looking, to realize like, oh, wait a second, this is really marking when it's turned off. Because when you look at the GPS from the Heroes Night, like there's a time where her car turns on, but it doesn't leave the parking lot, yeah. I think. And then it stops.
Yeah.
And then it comes back on later. And so the dealer has this installed. She signs an agreement, like a acknowledgement, consent. Like, I know this is on there. Yeah. I'm not going to try to remove it. And
for her, it's not something that like the normal person anyways would have known how to remove. And for her to even to think that she would is.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because again, she hadn't had a car. So for her to know anything about a GPS and where it's.
And probably wouldn't even know where it was at.
Right. Exactly. Because it's not like they tell you.
No. Yeah. It's right
but
here under your steering wheel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't mess with it though.
Yeah. And it's not really something that can just be accidentally unplugged. It's not like you're going to hit a bump and it's going to fall out, right. Or your foot's going to get tangled up in it, or, you know. Yeah.
They try to keep it fully engaged so that it, they can. I mean,
but
so
what
they know
would be
where
the point?
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, if they didn't.
Well, and I think that, too, is why she had to wait until the next day, was because they had to, you know, like she signed the paperwork and stuff the day before, but she had to, I guess it was maybe after banking hours.
Mm-hmm.
So she had to, like, get the money for insurance or something like that. I can't remember what it was, and take care of that the following morning. And then they were also, because, I mean, I think you can see on the GPS tracking, too, how, like, it heartbeats the night before.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They, you know, installed it and
had it up
it
and
or
running.
Whatever,
yeah.
And had it up and running. So,
because it looks like on the thing, there's like a couple of different entries where it's just like heartbeat, heartbeat, heartbeat. I mean, it's just sitting in the parking lot.
Yeah.
And I'd have to get back to look to see where we got it. But it said that, like you were talking about, she had to get the money out. She had a pretty large sum of cash on her at one point because her checking account was overdrawn. So she gave Julie money to put in hers to pay for the insurance. Then she used part of it to pay for the down payment. We don't know how much she still had on her after all of that. Just that she had cash on her. We know she went to the mall. She was going to pick up some things. Like she was looking for a backpack or something for Cora. Mm-hmm. And that she went to the mall. She saw a coworker, which I don't think was Hannah, right?
Mm-mm.
And said, you know, oh, got my new car, whatever. They talked for a minute. And then she ends up going back to her apartment, I think, based on the GPS.
Yeah.
And then.
Like, kind of hanging out there for a little bit.
Yeah. And then goes to Heroes.
Yeah.
She messages Randy.
Well, I think she stops at a dollar store, like a Family Dollar, Dollar General, somewhere along the way, either before the apartment or before Heroes.
Okay. But
there's like one little quick
like
stop.
Like one, she, yeah.
Yeah. Just.
And so she messages Randy, which we were talking about earlier, was a coworker that she'd had at Hurricanes, and you knew Randy because mm-hmm. you'd worked with him too, and asks him, is he still at Hurricanes? I think.
Yeah. Are you still working at Hurricanes? I'm out, you know, running around. I was going to stop by and have a drink or whatever while I was running some errands. And then that's when he tells her that he's not Hurricanes anymore, but he's at Heroes, which is right down the road, and that she can come there. And he's like, well, she's like, well, I don't know anybody there or whatever. And he's like, well, you know me.
Yeah.
And so I guess that's when she decides, you know, okay, I'll just go there. So, because it wasn't like she was like going out to party. I think she just wanted to go sit somewhere where she knew somebody and
hang out for a second.
Yeah, maybe
enjoy.
Celebrate for herself.
Yeah.
So,
like,
that was a big
oh
deal.
My gosh, I can take myself yeah. without having to roll out with somebody.
Well, and, you know, Cora wasn't there. I'm sure that if Cora was in town, that they would have been.
It would have been completely different.
Out
yeah.
School shopping together or, yeah. you know, at the park or whatever, which I'm almost 100% positive that they would have been out doing something. So,
yeah.
But instead,
it was
just going and sitting somewhere by herself.
I mean, she was 25 years old. She just gotten the ability to actually drive herself around mm-hmm. without having to rely on somebody to come get her or, you know, being
have a car
stuck
back
there.
By
so,
a
like, I don't really blame
anything.
Her for being like, hey, yeah. I think I'm just going to go mm-hmm. do, I can.
Go
Why
out.
Not?
Go
yeah.
just be.
And it's not like it was. You know, 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning right. and she's just hammered, you know, driving around. It's what, like 5 o'clock or
yeah.
something, I think on the GPS. Like it's this isn't something that is just how irresponsible.
Well, also too, it wasn't like she was just trying to go to like the bar. She was just trying to go somewhere where she knew
somebody.
Somebody was working. And maybe not at her job. You know what I mean? Maybe kind of like to get just a different vibe or whatever. And, you know, even Hurricanes, just like Heroes, serves food. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with having a drink with some food or just having some food in the middle of the day to celebrate.
Yeah.
You
know? So she goes and she hangs out for a little while. She meets Randy. And then Randy has some friends that show up. Denson and Mallory. Now, everything I've read says she had never met Denson prior to that night, but she may have had some mutual acquaintances with Mallory.
I'm pretty sure that they have at some point both met her before because of Hurricanes. Because Randy worked at Hurricanes. Randy was the bartended at Hurricanes. Mm-hmm. Very rarely did he ever wait tables unless they were, you know, like
super slammed.
Or the tables, you know, like usually bartenders will have a couple of tables, but he was just like mainly the bartender there. So, and they would come in, but Mallory and Denson would both come in. And, you know, whether it be like out trivia night or just sitting at the bar until Randy closed to, you know, go hang out with them after or whatever. And Daniela was like if she was working 9 times out of 10, she was working to close. Because that's just kind of, I mean, that's what you did. You worked to close to get the, you know, the money shifts or whatever. So,
do you remember them coming in here? I mean, Hurricanes?
Oh, yeah.
Like before all this? Like you remember actually seeing them there? So, like, it seems more likely.
They all played ball together.
Yeah.
So, like, not only just, like, coming in to hang out with Randy, but, like, the softball team would come in. And remember, like, this isn't me just, like, making it up. Like, my husband played ball with them, too. So, from the time I started working at Hurricanes until all of this happened.
Yeah.
That's literally when he stopped playing ball with them. So I don't even know if they all play ball together anymore.
Yeah.
So since all of this happened, but definitely, I mean, everybody from their softball team had been in there.
So it's more likely than not that she encountered them at some point.
And it's quite possible that they had been, I mean, I don't know when she stopped working at Hurricanes, and this was, you know, 2018. So it's possible that they hadn't seen each other in a year or two or whatever. Right. But to say that we'd never met before or didn't know anything about her or what, and maybe not know anything about her personally, but you've definitely met her before.
Yeah. And it's almost
definitely
like
encountered her before.
Distancing.
Yeah. And that's the other thing too. Like we would like, I don't ever remember like hanging out with Randy outside of work at Hurricanes other than, you know, softball games and stuff like that. But like, you know, when you close together, sometimes you go out to Cockeyed Charlie's down the road or whatever and have a drink, or to, you know, the neighborhood bar or whatever and have a drink. So those things happen too.
Yeah. Or with a coworker and you're just like, hey, you want to, And I think Daniela liked going to Cockeyed Charlie's, right? Because didn't they call to see if she'd been in there that night?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Cockeyed Charlie's was kind of the industry bar too. So like whenever anywhere on airport or Schillinger, you know, service industry, people got off work. If they were going to the bar, a lot of times they would either go to Cockeyed Charlie's or Bubble.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And things just get weird after this Heroes thing. Like she gets there and then here come the people that may or may not have known her. They say they didn't, but it seems probable that they did at least encounter her at some point. And she, would she have been the kind of person that would have been sitting there and people, she didn't even want to go to Heroes because she didn't know anybody, right? And so these people come up that they're saying, we've never met her prior to this night. It seems unlikely to me anyway that she would have just been like, oh, can I tag along with you?
Can I go with you guys?
I've never met you before.
Yeah. And that's probably why she was comfortable going, because she knew them from before and knew that they'd come up there as Randy's friends and she was Randy's friend and they were like, all supposed to meet up afterwards. So, like, I can see. Well, and also because, you know, there was messages where she was, like, trying to, it seemed like she was trying to meet up with Hannah. And Hannah was at work. So, in the meantime, well, you know, I'll just stay here until maybe she gets off and calls me or until I know what I'm going to do next or whatever. So, I mean, I don't think it's, like, unusual that she went. If it was just them and they didn't have plans with Randy afterwards, then it would definitely be out of the norm. But because the ultimate plan was to meet back up with him, then, I mean, it kind of makes sense, I guess.
And talking about the Hannah being at work, I think we, maybe it was through one of the other podcasts that covered her case, or it could have been in one of the articles. I can't remember. But they talked about that Danielle was sending Snapchats and things like throughout that night. Mm-hmm. And that there had been either text messages or Snapchats that were sent to Hannah. And one of them was her asking Hannah, was she working? Because she'd went by the mall and she thought Hannah was supposed to be working, I assume. And she said, I didn't see your car there.
Yeah.
And so has it ever been confirmed? Like, yeah, Hannah was at work that night.
I don't think so. But I also think that I feel like she was at work, but it wasn't. It was after Daniela went to the mall. Because she, if I remember right, Daniela went and got the car that morning and then from there went to the mall. So unless Hannah was working the lunch shift, mm-hmm. then she probably wouldn't have been there until, let's say, 3 or 4 o'clock.
Right.
And then worked till like 9 or 10. I don't know. But it was also said that through a friend of a friend or whatever, however that works, that Hannah had originally said that she didn't answer her that night because she was at work. And then that actually she wasn't really at work, but that she just didn't answer her phone call that night or whatever. So I don't know. That's the thing about the things that she said. There's like 2 or 3 versions of all of it. So it's kind of hard to keep up with it all.
So she goes to the bar with these people that she doesn't know, or she's at this bar and grill for hours because, you know, they said that they came in, watched the All-Star game, and then they go to Dublin's because they all decide Randy's got to close. We'll meet up with him when he gets off work. So let's go hang out at this other bar so he can get stuff closed, and we'll meet him at Ollie's. So we'll go down to Dublin's, which is literally like a block. It's right. Not very far.
Not at all.
And they all three take separate vehicles. Well, actually, before we get to there, because this was always interesting to me, that she, I don't think I realized it. I think you maybe had told me about it, but I didn't necessarily realize exactly what the difference was. That, okay, so it has that she gets to Heroes at 6:35. And then the first time the address pops up on the GPS is 6:34. And then her car is obviously turned off at 6:35 because it says stop. It sends a heartbeat at 6:58. But then her car is turned back on at 9:19 because that's when a location comes up. Not a heartbeat, but a right. location. Her car doesn't move. It's a 0 miles an hour from 9:19 to 9:22 when it says stop, which means her car was turned back off at that point. It doesn't leave Heroes for another 40 minutes. Yeah, 40 minutes, because the next time her car pings is at 10:02, and it's a location.
And that's when she's leaving.
And that would be when she was actually leaving, because it pops up, it comes on at 10:02, and then at 10:06, it's like 5 miles an hour, and it's on Old Chill Road.
Right,
and then it's at 10:08, right there at Dublin. So what happened between that, like, in that 40 minutes?
I think, I always just thought that she went out to the car, and I don't remember if she was smoking cigarettes or vaping or whatever, but, you know, went out and made a phone call, and then Hannah, you know, said that she had sent her a snap from her car that night. Yeah. So maybe that's the little time frame that she sent the Snapchat. But I mean,
because she,
maybe that was when she went out and tried to call Hannah and Hannah didn't answer again. So she was like, well, I guess I'm just going to hang out with them for the rest of the night or whatever.
Oh yeah. Maybe that is how
make
that,
another plan or whatever.
Hannah said one of the snaps said something like happily drinking at a sports bar or something like not sure if I should drive or something. So they leave they don't actually leave Heroes until 10. Then they go, Mallory, Denson, Daniela, drive individually down to Dublin, which is, we just looked at it. If her car cranks up at 10:02, but it doesn't actually leave, like, it's not showing any kind of movement until 10:06. And then literally 2 minutes later, she's stopped. So not far at all. They go in to Dublin's for about 45 minutes, I think. And this is where things get really sketchy because all three are together at the time that they leave, even though they're in separate vehicles. They all get to Dublin's at the same time. The plan at this point is everybody's going here because we're going to meet up with Randy afterwards when he gets done closing. And yet somehow in all of that, Mallory ends up deciding she's going somewhere else. Denson decides he's just going to go home. And Daniela follows him, but he doesn't know why she followed him. Because I don't know, maybe because all you guys had a plan whenever you left and went to this place that you were all going to end up at the same spot again. And so...
Well, and at what point did they all tell Randy?
Right?
That, hey, just kidding. We're not waiting.
Nobody's going to be there, actually. Like, you can go, but we're not going to be there. So they all leave. Nobody knows how much she's had to drink at this point. And we'll know from the autopsy and toxicology that it... I mean, I don't know if they could tell.
Right.
But they leave. Mallory goes one way on Old Shell, like back towards runway, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Denson turns the opposite way because he's supposedly going home. And he says he had no idea Danielle is behind him, right? Until she flashes her lights on the interstate.
Right.
So how did you know that this girl that you've never met before was behind you on the interstate?
Right. If you didn't have any idea that she was following you.
Right. And yet he pulls off and they go, okay, there's a Waffle House across the street that's open.
Mm-hmm.
Under, back the other way, like if you go back under the interstate, there's a very well-lit gas station.
Yeah.
All of these areas, but you stop at the closed gas station.
Dark, closed right gas station.
Like very dark. Right. And small. Not right on the road because you got to go across that service road right there too.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a pain to get to.
Yeah, it is.
To pull over to see what it is that she needs. And but then
whoever this person is flashing.
Yes.
How do you know who?
Because and because I don't know that he ever said like Daniela flashed her lights.
Right.
I saw somebody flashing their lights. So like, okay, somebody's flashing their lights and I don't know who it is. I am sure as shit not pulling over.
Especially not that time of night.
No.
Or in that area.
And so he pulls over, not 100% sure maybe at this point that it's actually Daniela. And he says it is when they get to, you know, they pull in. And that she tells him that she can't find her phone. And this is always, like, this really strikes me because for somebody who didn't know her prior to this, didn't really talk to her. He added her on Facebook and invited her to a party at his house, mm-hmm. right? That's how he actually calls her phone, I guess, like, you know, I can't find my phone, call it, see if we can hear it. He calls twice, and I don't think anybody realized, really, that on Facebook Messenger, even if you call, like, it has a voicemail feature where you leave a message. So it just kind of, like, inadvertently left a message on there, and it's him, right, saying, like, something about being at Dublin's. And then there's a female voice that you can hear at the beginning of the first audio. The female voice at the beginning sounds incredibly.
Yeah. But then at the end, the other female voice doesn't sound the same.
No.
It sounds like coherent.
It's very clear, coherent, understood.
But it's just like, oh, no. I don't know. That whole recording is
weird.
Yes.
Because, and then saying anything at first that the first female voice says, like, it sounds like words.
Right.
But
it also sounds like mumbo jumbo.
Yeah. It's him asking, right? Right after that, like, did you leave it at Dublin's or something? Mm-hmm. And then
a Dubliner. I don't remember you having it at Dubliner or something.
Yeah. And then there is a second call. So my guess is, like, they try to call again looking for it. And it's a very clear female voice in that. And so we know that's at, like, 11:07 and 11:08, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
the crazy thing about this is, though, is that almost as soon as they pull into this parking lot of this closed shell gas station, her GPS pings for the last time.
And it just stops.
It's been working all day.
Even the night before.
Even the night before. And suddenly, it just malfunctions.
It stops working.
And stops working.
It's kind of strange that the black box just kind of stopped.
Yeah, especially because it worked literally all the way up until that moment. I mean, it was installed like the evening before, and you know, right. You can see all the data from that.
Yeah.
And then every single move that vehicle made that day is tracked. So,
right. Yeah. And
the fact that it just stopped
at that particular point. Location. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, like, what are the odds that one day in the thing would fail?
Right.
I mean, you know, if it had been running for a long time, maybe. But it surprised me when I first heard about that.
And, you know, weird things happen. And it is totally one of those things where, like, one thing's a coincidence, but when you start looking at everything else, it's like, okay, come on.
Yeah. Yeah. And I were talking about that. Yeah.
And did they ever, so there's two cars that pull in at first, and then one of the cars leave, and then another one comes in. And they had said, I remember at the beginning, they did not know whether the car that returns was the same car that left initially, or if it was a different car. Did they ever tell you?
No, that's all they ever said, was that, you know, it could have been the same car and it could have been a different car, but that it wasn't, you know, that they couldn't really tell because of the quality of the surveillance, which also is pretty interesting considering the fact that when that surveillance was put out, you know, shortly after she went missing, being how that was, you know, the last that she was seen, they were immediately, you know, in touch, you know, MPD was immediately in touch with whatever news outlet it was that had shared it, that had gone and actually got that surveillance from that night and mm-hmm. shared it, and it had them, you know, immediately take it down. And if I remember correctly, something along the lines of, you know, it's still an open investigation and we're not sure if it could put her in danger, but if you can't see anything, you know, yeah. It just, the way that they really were with any surveillance in Daniela's case was just unusual. Because, you know, once we found out that there was surveillance of her from Heroes and Dublin's, you know, we asked about that because, you know, normally when somebody goes missing, if there's surveillance of them from the time that they were last seen, there isn't an issue showing that because it right. gives an accurate description of what this person looked like, what they were wearing. Sometimes even their nature or their state, you know, what kind of, I guess what kind of shape they're in, maybe, you know, especially sure. there were a few stories actually not long after Daniela went missing of girls that, you know, had gone missing, leaving bars, and they were showing the surveillance of these girls leaving the bars, you know, to give the public a description. And not only did they not do that with Daniela, but they refused to share it with, you know, anybody else for that matter, whether it was, you know, me or Julie or the public. But they also wouldn't verify things that, you know, were said before. So, like, you know, let's say they said she had on jeans or leggings and a black t-shirt. Well, for whatever reason, they wouldn't say, yeah, that's what she was seen on in the surveillance, even though they wouldn't, you know, put it out to the public. So just all of that, you know, if they had surveillance from that night, then you would also think that they would have had surveillance of her car. So they would have had a, you know, a more accurate description of her car. Cause that was one of the things too, in the beginning, for the first, probably at least, I want to say probably the first month, everything that went out was about a dark blue or dark purple Chevy Cruze, which the car was neither, you know, it was a light purple. And they just didn't, they didn't seem to use anything that they claimed they had surveillance of to help, you know, be more specific to the public, although they were asking for the public's help in, you know, any information or if you see her or anything like that.
Yeah.
But
not giving them anything to go on, basically. Yeah.
Right. Basically, this is what we think she was wearing. This is what color we think the car was. You know, these are the places that we think she was. And
so weird. Has anybody ever seen the Dublins or Heroes footage?
Not that, I'm aware of.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Because that would, honestly, I know that the shell is the last visual on her, but it's the last, I mean, Dublin's and the Heroes ones would actually have
right.
her out of the car. So that's,
and the shell surveillance was horrible.
Yeah. You know, yeah.
When we were looking at the timeline, initially, the timeline said that she left Heroes at like 9 something.
Mm-hmm.
And that timeline said all timeline, you know, all entries have been validated by timestamps or text messages or whatever. But we know she didn't actually leave Heroes until 10, whatever, based on her GPS. So where did the 9 come from?
Randy.
Gotcha.
Okay. Interesting.
And he didn't mention that she came back in?
Mm-mm. No. He never said anything about it. He said that she left around 9:15 and, you know, somewhere, or that, you know, they all went. And that's the other thing, too. If she didn't, she didn't leave with them if she would have left at that point, because they were still there. But I also wonder if, because we had talked about, you know, that was about how Hannah had said that she had gotten a Snapchat from her that night in the car. And
mm-hmm.
I wondered if that wasn't her, you know, going out to the car to see if her and Hannah were going to hang out that night. And that was kind of when she decided, okay, well, then I'll just tag along with them since she's, you know, not answering or whatever. And so she went back in.
Hmm.
But that's just a theory.
We talked about that when we were recording the episode, actually, that
yeah.
that brief period where she is going out to, the car and she comes back in, was it one of the things where, you know, did she go out there just to make a phone call, or did she go out there? Did she smoke, do you know, like cigarettes or anything?
I don't think she smoked cigarettes, but I wouldn't be surprised if she was vaping.
So she could have possibly went outside to like, one of the things I thought about was like, was her phone dying or whatever? Did she go stick it on the charger for a few minutes? But
that could be too. I mean, she did start her car, so.
Yeah, and it wouldn't have been cold,
right?
Because it's in July, but it could have been hot.
Well, it was raining.
True. So maybe she was sitting in the car, you know, either charging her phone or, like you said, making the phone call to see, like, what other options might be available to her to go out. And then when there weren't any, she was just like, well, I'll just go back inside.
I'll just go hang out with these people.
Yeah.
So then we have that the GPS stops, and then we know from the camera, because we can't really track her whereabouts after that with the GPS. So we have no way of knowing really which direction she went, which is part of the reason why it took so long to find her, because she didn't have her phone on her. So they couldn't use that to track cell phone pings. Her GPS wasn't working. So they leave, and then really kind of all we have to go on from that is whatever Denson provided.
Right.
Did he ever, like, I know he meets up with Julie to file the report and give her Daniela's phone, but did he ever actually try to like give a timeline to her about it? Or did all of that stuff just come from Randy and Mallory?
I don't know. Everything that the whole timeline pretty much came from Randy, because he, like, we had, an advocate, Mary, that came down to help. And me, her and I actually went and sat down with Randy at Hurricane and had a whole conversation where he, you know, told us his timeline of events. And like, we took, you know, took notes and basically like had an interview with him where he, and, you know, he let us look at his phone or whatever and showed us the, you know, Facebook messages and all of that stuff. And so Denson, I know for a fact, I never met with Julie outside of, you know, that initial meeting at the police station and then, or not going again, but being interviewed again or whatever. But other than that, they never like sat down and discussed anything. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
But Mallory did. Mallory talked to her, right? Or talked to somebody.
Talked to me, yeah. I mean, I talked to... Denson was the only one that really wouldn't talk to me. Like, he just didn't. And to be honest with you, there was so much unknown in that whole thing that I didn't really, like, feel comfortable talking to him. You know what I mean? So...
Yeah.
Randy, we were on a different, like, level with Randy up until all of this happened. We didn't like hang out with him outside of, you know, work or softball or anything, but he was kind of the one that recruited my husband to play. So, I mean, we just didn't have like any kind of like bond with Denson outside of them playing ball together. So It was all just weird and unknown to me.
So but y'all did get a message, y'all did get a screenshot or something, right, from Mallory that showed where Denson had texted her, right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. When he got back. So picture. That's how you knew about what time he got back to pick up the cell phone.
Right.
And so his story at the time was, you know, he leaves the Shell station. He thinks that she's behind him, but I guess obviously doesn't really pay attention. To the fact that,
which is weird because,
right, he paid attention going.
Yeah,
you paid attention enough on the way there to know that somebody was following you and flashing you.
Well, and you know, Mary and I were talking about this, and he says, you know, a car was flashing their lights, right, and he really doesn't, I think, give any kind of indication, at least not that we've seen, that he knew for sure that it was her behind him. And so I would love to know the thought process here. Like, you're driving down the interstate, you look up and you're like, oh wow, that car behind me is flashing the lights, but I don't know that car because I'm not familiar with this person supposedly before tonight anyway. But you know what, let me pull over in this closed gas station parking lot for this person that I'm not entirely sure about. You know, I'm not sure
right.
her behind me. I don't know. It could be anybody, really.
Right.
Sure.
At 11 o'clock at night.
Because if somebody flashes their lights at me, I'm damn sure not pulling over for them.
Yeah.
Right.
But maybe
didn't even pull over in the best populated area.
Yeah. You know, that just kind of blows my mind. So it makes me feel like he had to have some kind of idea that it's her behind him, right? So he's paying at least that much attention. And I get it. I guess if lights are flashing behind you, that probably does catch your attention a little bit. But then, like, my son and I go places and he'll drive his truck. If he's following me, like, I'm paying attention enough to, like, look up and down to see if he's still behind me. Because if he gets stuck at a red light or something, then, you know, I want to try to slow down or whatever so he can catch back up. So I find it kind of hard to believe, actually, but I guess maybe not everybody's like that. And maybe because it's an adult, they weren't really paying attention. But he says he gets back, thinks she's been following him. Obviously, she wasn't because she doesn't pull in with him because nobody ever sees her again. And he gets the phone, waits a few minutes, and then he goes to Ollie's, even though he'd originally said he was going home. And I guess the reasoning for going to Ollie's was the fact that, like, oh, now he's got her phone. He's hoping she'll show back up to get it. But what really, I guess, kind of clouds that is the fact that he was repeatedly calling and sending messages to her Facebook. And it's
while you have her phone.
Yeah. Like, how is she going
to
answer?
That is, like, the most bizarre thing to me.
Yeah.
I mean, the assumption is, right, that she will log into her Facebook from somewhere. But if she was,
but if that's the case, why would he do it over and over? Why wouldn't he just do it and then wait for her to respond? Because he knows she doesn't have her phone.
Well, not only that, but like, you know that she's not logging into her Facebook. Like, if you know from the gas station that she was by herself and she didn't have anybody with her. And the plan was for her to follow you back to Dublin to look for her phone. And you went back to Dublin and she didn't show up and you had enough time to go inside and retrieve mm-hmm. the phone and text whoever, Mallory, Randy, both, whatever, and say, you know, I got the phone or whatever. And then you leave and you're messaging her or calling her on her Facebook. This is all, mm-hmm. I mean, did you think that she was going to stop at a gas station and borrow a stranger's phone and log into her Facebook and see if she had any missed calls or
it tells you, or it used to, I don't know if it still does, but it used to tell you, you know, they haven't been active in so long.
Right. Oh, right.
You know, yeah. Because I remember there being a comment that Julie had noticed like on Thursday or something, like she hadn't been on Facebook in like 2 days because it said she hadn't. And so, you know, if he's checking this, then that's something that he should see is, well, crap, I've got her phone and she hadn't been on Facebook to even see these messages.
Right.
And so that just, I don't know, something about that just kind of, the whole thing is just weird to me in general. But, you know,
it's actually, I was just looking at my messenger and it still says the same thing. Like there's somebody on mine that says active 31 minutes ago. So,
and I guess kind of like playing devil's advocate a little bit, we did talk to an investigator that we kind of like will run stuff by just to kind of get an opinion on it, and gave him, you know, the gist of it and what we know, and he said, I mean, I don't think he did anything wrong. He said, you know, I think that if he was just being a nice guy, then, you know, he said, no, I'm not sure that I would have volunteered to go back to the bar to get her phone. He said, I think I probably would have been like, okay, well, it's not in your car. I've helped you look for it. So go back and check the last place you're at. He said, I probably would have went home. He said, so I don't really understand that part of it, but he was like, I mean, is he really just that nice of a guy that he would volunteer to do that?
And to be perfectly honest, if he was going back because he felt she couldn't, you know, for whatever reason.
Right.
I personally wouldn't have left her sitting there either. I would have asked if she wanted to get a ride back.
And you would think too, like if that's the case, then you would definitely be watching behind you
mm-hmm.
to make right. sure that they were, you know, safe.
Yeah.
Why aren't you paying attention? I mean, she could have had a flat tire. Are you yeah. not a nice enough guy that you're paying enough attention to know that she's getting there safely?
Well, and from the sound of the audio,
she was way too inebriated to be
even just trying to. Well, and yeah. even just trying to get out of that gas station and back.
Yeah,
back and, to where they came from is right. amazing itself.
Yeah, it is. And okay, another question too is the one thing that the police department said when they came out and did the press release was that they were able to follow her car up to a certain point and then it turned towards a more populated area.
Mm-hmm.
What was this populated area? Did they tell y'all?
No.
Because, I mean, that is...
That's a pretty vague
highly populated area where she, you know, like, there's a lot of houses did around
she,
there.
And yeah, did then, she? Did we go down government this way? Did we go down government that way? Did we get back on the interstate? Because anywhere from
direction
that gap,
of the interstate, right. like...
Because anywhere from that direction is more populated than that area at that time.
Right, yeah. Because there's like, there's literally a big neighborhood, right, two lights down, like the light that you use to turn into the gas station, there's mm-hmm. one light right past that, and then there's a huge subdivision.
Yeah.
And then if you go back towards the left, same thing. If you go under the interstate, there's residential areas back there. If you get on the interstate, then you go downtown, that's going to be more populated if you go one way. Or you could, I guess, technically be going towards Mississippi. I mean, there's 100 ways
yeah.
that you could leave that gas station and turn that would be headed in a generally populated area.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing. Everything from that night was so secretive.
And, you know, this was another thing that we talked about was that, you know, 2 weeks after this happens, somebody breaks into I think it was 2 weeks after this, they break into a gas station. They rob a gas station. And they release the surveillance video all over the news of the perpetrator.
Yeah.
And they're like, if anybody recognizes this person, call us. Mm-hmm. What was the difference there? You have an adult female that is missing along with her car that you've had no sign, no traces of. You haven't picked her up on, you know, traffic cameras. You haven't picked her up on anything. What makes you think that somehow that is not as important to like release that? Because they didn't also, they also didn't release a still image or anything of her from that night so that people could say like, oh, I remember that hat or, you know.
That's literally what we asked for too. When they said that they wouldn't, weren't going to release their surveillance, they were like, you know, we said, okay, can you give us a still shot from it that has an accurate description of what she was wearing? That way we can put that on the flyer. Because if you knew Daniela, and you know, and if you, I mean, everybody pretty much knows at this point, but her hair color was never the same.
Mm-hmm.
You could see her one day, and a few days later, she could have a completely different colored hair.
Yeah. Oh, and the other thing about the, that Carrie and I talked about with the location, the populated location, not only was like that area not populated, but it was very, I guess, rural or industrial. I don't, without looking at it specifically, but like
more,
she lived in a populated area, a populated, I shouldn't say. Well, she lived in a kind of a populated, but it, she had an apartment complex. I mean, it would be obvious where she was going if she was heading towards home.
Yeah.
Right.
Would the area just look nothing at all like it? So
I don't think they ever even gave a location for anybody that might would have even seen her. You know,
nothing was really specific.
Mm-mm.
Or descriptive.
If you have any information regarding Daniela Vian's case, please call the Mobile Police Department at 251-208-1750, or you can submit an anonymous tip either by text or by phone at 841-251-0644. Or you can also reach out to us on our website at alcoldcase.com or message us on social media. And as always, all of this information will be on our episode description.
Since Alabama Cold Case Advocacy's creation, we have dedicated innumerable hours to researching and networking in an effort to provide the largest platform we can to the cases we share. We shoulder all associated expenses with Alabama Cold Case Advocacy out of our own pocket, including the subscription fees for researching and production of the Unforgotten podcast to provide a cost-free avenue for the victims' families of those cases.
We hope you will join in our efforts to raise awareness of Alabama's missing and murdered and support these families who have been forced to carry the immeasurable loss of their loved ones and the fight for answers. If you appreciate our mission and you are inspired to make a donation, your extra support will enable the ACCA to continue our research, share the cold cases, and help those families know that they are also unforgotten.
Unforgotten is an Alabama Cold Case Advocacy podcast recorded in conjunction with Riverside FM, hosted and distributed by Red Circle to your favorite podcast platforms. Content, research, artwork, and production are by Sellers and Stormy of Alabama Cold Case Advocacy. Credits for music, sound clips, special mentions, and research sources can be found in each episode's description. Your support helps us continue producing Unforgotten and further Alabama Cold Case's mission of advocacy and awareness. There are a few ways you can help us light the path. Make a one-time or monthly donation to Unforgotten through Red Circle, sign up for a one-time or recurring donation through the ACCA website, or subscribe to the Unforgotten Patreon channel for early access to ad-free episodes. You will find the links for all three in our episode descriptions. Another cost-free way to be of great help is to follow us on social media. But most importantly, whatever you do, tell everyone you know about these cases. Sharing their stories is one of the most effective ways to help find resolution for Alabama's cold cases. Be the spark. Thank you for listening, and until next time, remember, justice may be delayed, but the victims and their families remain unforgotten.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
There's nothing more satisfying than finding the perfect green paint for your living room. Except maybe popping open that can of Valspar Ultra and rolling that first smooth stroke on the wall. And there's nothing more satisfying than admiring your freshly painted wall.
Ooh.
Except maybe peeling off the painter's tape to see those crisp edges. But the most satisfying part of all? Valspar Ultra's price tag, starting at $29.98 a gallon. Affordable, durable, available at Lowe's. Price varies by sheen.